Blog Talk Radio.
Again to another episode of Suspense Radio One-on-One. If you're wondering, wow, you did two shows back-to-back, that is true. And today, we now have on Connie DiMarco, and she's going to be talking about her latest book in a new mystery series. It's called The Madness of Mercury. It starts a Zodiac mystery series that she is putting out, so it'll be interesting to kind of get into that and see what we got going on. Also, we want to let you know, of course, that all the shows here on Suspense Radio are brought to you by Kensington Books. So make sure you visit kensingtonbooks.com for more information. That includes Daniel Palmer, Kevin O'Brien, Lisa Jackson, Mary Burton, and many more. So visit kensingtonbooks.com for more information. And also, if you're looking for a new thrill, check out great books by Crooked Lane Books. That includes Leslie Karst and Anna Carlisle. And you can visit crookedlanebooks.com for more information on that. So let's jump in here to our guest. Again, she is on tour with Partners in Crime Tour, and her book comes out June the 8th. So make sure that you mark that down in your calendar. And it is the latest now in her new series, a Zodiac mystery series called The Madness of Mercury. So Connie, we want to thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm great, John. Thanks so much for having me.
So, like I mentioned, this book now starts a new series for you in a Zodiac mystery. It's called The Madness of Mercury. It's a cozy book. And why don't you go ahead and jump us into what you got going on here?
Sure. Well, I lived in San Francisco many years ago, and I always felt that it was a wonderful city to set a mystery in. And I was looking for an unusual protagonist, and I thought, okay, why not an astrologer? Over the years, I've collected a bunch of astrology books and have read a lot. So that's the setting for the Zodiac Mysteries. Julia Bonatti, my protagonist, is an astrologer. She's a woman who planned on a very quiet life and a teaching career, and when her fiancé is killed in a hit-and-run accident, she's no longer able to continue with that life choice, and she begins the study of astrology. She finds solace there. She's looking for answers to her own dilemma, and she discovers that she loves it and she has a talent for helping other people. The one thing she never planned on was that murder would be part of her practice. And every person that she comes in contact with draws her into a different crime, and she's more or less compelled to solve that crime. And as you realize, you know, with an amateur sleuth, I believe you have to have a burning reason to have them involved in the crime. So in the first book in the series, The Madness of Mercury, Julia writes a newspaper column, an astrological advice column for the Chronicle called Ask Zodia. And in this column, she responds to a woman who's written to her. The woman is very, very concerned about her mother, who wants to join a church but is required to sign over her property and her life savings to this church. Julia speaks out very vehemently and advises the woman to investigate and perhaps hire a lawyer to protect her mother. What happens to her then is that unwittingly she now becomes the main target of the Reverend Roy, who is a recently arrived in the city cult leader, and he has a group of followers called the Army of the Prophet. And Reverend Roy has a very dark agenda, and Julia is immediately harassed, receives death threats, and ultimately is driven out of her apartment. And this is the backdrop of the actual mystery in the book.
Now, that's a little more involved typically than a lot of, you know, cozy mysteries. You have a lot more, like emotional stuff that's going on with the character, aside from just, you know, the cuteness of going out at Amateur Sleuth and Jessica Fletchering it and finding the murder. You put a lot more emotional charge into your character. Was that just to kind of add a little bit more depth? Was that to give a little bit more mystery, a little bit more intrigue to the character, besides just the plot of, you know, solving the mystery?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I first started writing, I was a complete babe in the woods, and I didn't realize that if you had an amateur sleuth, you were essentially categorized in the cozy category. I just don't worry about the category. If with this story and with other stories, my other series, the Soup Lovers Mysteries from Berkeley Prime Crime, I just wrote the book I wanted to write, and Berkeley was absolutely wonderful. They just let me write the stories that I wanted to write. Yes, it was a cozy setting, but I'm more of a reader of thrillers and darker mysteries. So what intrigues me is the death-defying adventures that my protagonist can have. I mean, I really don't approach it as most cozy writers do. In fact, one writer friend of mine, we were on a panel together. It was a cozy panel, and she was describing everyone's books, and she got to the end of the table where I was seated, and she said, and Connie writes, dark cozies, which I thought was kind of funny. So with the Zodiac Mysteries, I just wanted it to be as deep and as adventurous and as scary as possible. And it's wonderful that my publisher is Midnight Ink, and they put out a NetGalley link on Goodreads for various reviewers. So I've been reading some of the reviews and hoping they were good. And they were good. The book seems to be very well received. But a few people remarked that, I thought I was picking up a cozy, but actually, then I thought it was something else. And the reviews go on in this fashion. But at least nobody put the book down. You know, they kept turning pages, which is the important thing.
Now, your character, of course, is an astrologer, and astrology is a subject that I think a lot of people, they've heard the word, and they kind of have an idea of what an astrologer does. But when you decided to make Julia an astrologer, how much thought did you go into saying, okay, let's talk about the profession, let's talk about the Zodiac, because there's so much intrigue just within that area that you could go to many different kinds of things. How in-depth did you kind of want to get to maybe educate people in the astrology world and in the thing that Julia does, again, outside of the normal mystery?
Well, I wanted to tread a fine line here. Is that the analogy I'm looking for? You have to make Julia's profession believable in the kinds of things that she does, the subjects she brings up with her clients, which I think is the most illustrative of the whole subject. But you don't want to bore people with it either. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can communicate a lot in the context of some dialogue, but it's really truly a mystery, or maybe even a mystery bordering on the thriller with the danger of the army of the prophet. So I would pick and choose the moments where it was important to get something across so that the reader would understand what Julia does for her profession and how she deals with people. Now, there's a lot of different areas within the field of astrology, but Julia's specialty is mostly the one-on-one individual charts and also composite charts and working with relationships. So she has a private clientele that she's built up over a few years that is earning her a living. She has her newspaper advice column, and then occasionally she'll meet clients at an occult bookstore in North Beach in San Francisco for private sessions. And the bookstore is owned by her best friend, Gail, who's gotten into this business. And Julia is sometimes dragged in to work on psychic fairs where unique problems come to her. So I wanted to illustrate within the context of the mystery the kinds of problems that Julia deals with her clients. And I didn't want to go past that because the book isn't really about astrology. The only other thing I had to consider, too, was if I'm going to have a victim and a murderer, and Julia has to solve the crime using astrology, those charts have to be somewhat accurate. So that was kind of fun. I invented the Reverend Roy, who's a Mercury-ruled preacher. In other words, he's silver-tongued, he's very charismatic, he can sway the crowds with his words, but ultimately he's power-hungry.
And let's talk a little bit about Julia here, because when you started this series, you kind of had to sit back and figure out what type of character you wanted to lead. So why was Julia that person that was perfect to lead now this new series?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Julia's not young enough that she falls into the ingenue character, which often happens with cozy mysteries. She's a little bit older. She's a little bit past mid-30s. She appealed to me because she's at that age where one has survived the angst of growing up, and yet one is not quite middle-aged, per se. So she has a certain worldly wisdom, and she has a certain maturity. She's not a kid, nor is she has she become embittered by the facts of her life, by the fact that she was raised by her grandmother. She's an only child, and now she's lost her chance at what she would have considered a normal life, and this has now become her new normal. So I felt that there were a lot of facets to her character that everyone can relate to, maybe particularly women more so than men. I don't know.
Interesting. And that's kind of when you decided, hey, let's get into the series here, and you now named it The Madness of Mercury. You have Julia. You have everything going on. When you started building now the world that you now have created and the characters and the mystery and everything, did you kind of, and we just kind of had another author on before, and I asked the same question I'm going to ask you is, do you know kind of who the killer is? Did you know, or did you just have these cast of characters, and then you started going and writing, and then maybe halfway through, it surprised you with you're like, okay, that's the one I got to have do it. So then you kind of go back and drop a little clues here and there. Or did you know right from the beginning, this is who you were going to have, and then you kind of, you know, there was really no surprises for you as an author?
I can't do it that way. I do like to work backwards, deductively. So what always intrigues me, what inspires me, is the actual crime. And actually, what did surprise me was the element of, you know, I never start out with the idea of a theme or the idea of a message. I think it can get very preachy, you know, to approach a concept like that. But what I realized was that I am fascinated, confounded really, by people who follow blindly, whether it's a religious leader, a political leader, or another kind of leader. And so, but to get back to your question, I always work deductively. So I start from the crime, and I don't want to talk too much about the ultimate murderer because it would be a giveaway, but a spoiler. But really the issue with Julia is the terrible betrayal. So I knew who the murderer would be when I started. What did surprise me was that I was living in San Francisco during the years of Jim Jones's rise.
That was crazy.
Really, really crazy.
Yeah.
And I was pretty young, so I didn't really pay a lot of attention to some preacher who had a church in the Fillmore. I probably had a lot of preconceived notions about it. But I was woken up and shocked totally, of course, when the shootings in Guyana and the poisonings in Guyana happened and Congressman Ryan was killed and several others. But I wanted to base Reverend Roy and the, I call it the Prophet's Tabernacle in The Madness of Mercury. So I went back and did quite a lot of research and reading and relearning all that stuff about Jim Jones before his star fell. I mean, you have to realize that he was very much admired and revered in San Francisco, and probably around the country for all of his good works. He bilked his followers for money and property, and in turn passed around quite a lot of large checks to various organizations. And he had politicians in his pocket and society people in his pocket, and he really wielded an enormous amount of power. And, of course, no one at the time understood that he was quite mad. And later, Mayor Moscone and Willie Brown and various Harvey Milk also, both Moscone and Milk were fairly soon victims of shootings themselves. But everyone very busily tried to backtrack after Guyana. But he was actually very much admired. So that was the surprise for me, was in building the Reverend Roy character in the Prophet's Tabernacle, how really frightening the real-life situation was in the city. And, you know, the fiction doesn't exaggerate, nor does the real life exaggerate. So that was the surprise for me, was that it gave me a lot of material to work with in terms of writing the book, but I was taken aback by what I read.
Yeah,
in fact,
I mean, that was definitely a weird time. And if people don't know, I mean, just in case there's younger readers, Jim Jones is the one that is, you know, on Jonestown and had the mass suicide. That's where the term, you know, you're drinking the Kool-Aid comes from. When people say, oh, don't just drink the Kool-Aid. Well, that's because he put the poison in the Kool-Aid and everybody drank the Kool-Aid. So that's where that term comes. A lot of people don't realize when it's like, oh, you know, you're just drinking the Kool-Aid. That's because you're either following him or you're not drinking the Kool-Aid, and that's where that came from. And so readers can kind of tell just from listening here in the last, you know, 14 minutes that, yeah, I understand when your fan had said, hey, I was going to read a cozy, but it's a little bit more than that. But the one thing that, you know, you have the elements of everything, of course, it's the cast of characters, and it's the setting, and it's everything that you have in there. So was there one or two kind of characters outside of Julia that you would kind of talk about that would be considered, you know, ones that engaged a little bit more than maybe you thought you would, or, you know, some kind of funny comic relief kind of people in there that you're really kind of like, wow, you know, they really kind of impressed me with how they, you know, came out in the book.
Yeah, well, in The Madness of Mercury, and just as a little aside here, John, I later discovered after I titled the book that The Madness of Mercury actually refers to a neurological condition that hat makers have suffered from, a little trivia here, from the inhalation of mercury fumes in the hat-making process. But that's neither here nor there. But in The Madness of Mercury, not only Julia, but anyone that the Reverend perceives as an abomination unto the Lord, as he says, and that includes gays, it includes psychics, it includes astrologers, it includes anyone who isn't going to agree with him. Other people at the Mystic Eye, the occult bookshop, other people who are associated with it as readers and as friends, are also targeted by the Reverend, and their business is interfered with, and they are also threatened. So I wanted to pull in lots of fun occult characters, and I have one character, Nikolai, who is a past life regression hypnotist who has a local community access cable show where he performs exorcisms. I just had a lot of fun with a lot of the minor characters. In terms of the core characters in the book, there's Julia, her grandmother, who raised her, who's not your typical grandmother, and also one character I've become very, very fond of. His name is Quan Lee, and he lives, he's a doctor of Chinese medicine and an acupuncturist, and he lives in Julia's grandmother's first floor apartment in North Beach. And he has become a sounding board for Julia when she's upset or confused or just struggling with a problem. And he's sort of her surrogate grandfather in this thing. And he has become kind of a Yoda figure for her. So he's very useful in terms of giving Julia a different perspective on a crime or on a situation that she's not quite sure how to approach. And then, of course, Julia has her two girlfriends, her friend Gail, who owns the shop, and her friend Cheryl, who manages it. And Cheryl has her own problems. She's going through a divorce from her cheating endodontist husband, who lives in Berkeley. And so each character has their own backstory and will appear probably in every book, some more so than others. But I think, you know, as writers, we rely on that core group of people. We don't particularly want to kill them off, but, you know, they could die in a book. Who knows?
You never know, right?
You never know, right?
And now that, so, and I remind everybody, we're speaking here with author Connie DiMarco, and the book is called The Madness of Mercury. Now, you can visit Connie at ConnieDiMarco.com, and that's DiMarco. That's how you spell DiMarco. And you can go there and check everything out if you go to her website. Now, going forward with the series, you know, you already kind of have plans, I'm sure, on how you're going to kind of go forward with the series. Do you have any idea of, you know, how long is this going to keep going and going, and how long is it going to be? Is you going to keep writing it, or do you have any, or do you even know?
I think I will, because I think Julia is a unique character in a unique setting. And I have already turned in book two in this series to Midnight Ink. Book two I have tentatively entitled Dark Sun. Dark Sun doesn't have quite the interesting background of the crazy preacher in the city that threatens Julia, but Julia becomes involved with a particular family that she knows very well, and there is a murder involved in this. Pretty much every book I plan to be a straight-ahead murder investigation that Julia finds herself caught up in. Of course, she will have contacts with the police, but essentially she'll stay an amateur sleuth. So, you know, once again, you really need a burning reason for an amateur sleuth to become involved in a mystery. So my publisher is committed to three books. They have optioned three books. The third one is not as yet written, but I'm working on it. And after that, we'll just see how it goes.
Now, with the you know, the internet and the ability of social media and everything so instantaneous, you're able to receive instant access and instant notification of when someone reads your books. You know, of course, it wasn't like that, you know, years ago. But now and the reason I bring it up is because you had that fan that said, hey, you know, this is a little darker than I expected and this and that. Do you let the fans, or a little bit when they start talking on social media, do you kind of let that influence your writing maybe a little bit as you go forward? Or do you just kind of look at it and say, oh, that's nice, you know, I like what you said, and you just, you know, kind of go forward and whatever you were going to do?
I just go forward. I think, you know, too many cooks can spoil the soup. As long as, you know, our goal is to write the best book we can write and hopefully sell it well, as long as they're turning the pages, whether it turned out to be the book they thought it would be or wasn't, as long as they turned the pages and came away and said, gee, I really liked it, couldn't put it down, I'll give it 5 stars. You know, that's really the goal, I think, for all writers. I don't think you can worry that you're a crowd pleaser, that you can please everyone. Some people might read this and get the wrong message and think that it's some sort of an anti-Christian statement, which is not at all true. These people aren't Christians, they're criminals. But if they think that, then they've sort of missed the point of the whole book. So I think you can get too caught up in whether people like it or whether they don't. But I'll tell you a funny story about that. The first book that I ever published in My Soup Lovers Mystery series was called A Spoonful of Murder. I had just had enough time to set up the website and try to get an email organized and do all that stuff. And my daughter is much more social media savvy than I, and she went on Amazon and discovered that my book had one review, and it was a 1-star review. And it was, and she was very, very upset about it. And she said, "Aren't you upset?" And I said, "No, I'm not really. Okay, I was just nervous that my editor loved it, and she did love it, and it's published, it's doing well." She said, "Well, you know, this is terrible. This woman," and it was very funny because it was a woman named Debbie in Arkansas or someplace, and she said, "I really liked the book until the murder happened." And then she went on for about six more paragraphs as to why she didn't like the book and why my amateur sleuth was investigating and why there were no consequences for her. And it had a lot more to do with Debbie than it had to do with the book. But I just thought, you know, I can't worry about that. It's too bad it's the first review on Amazon.
Right.
But since then, there have been many, many others that are very positive. So I think it can be a trap to worry if you're pleasing a reader. The best way to please a reader is just to keep them reading.
Yeah, and you got to have a little bit of anxiety because you got a little less than a month left. This is your first book in a new series. And you know, so I'm sure you have a little bit of early reviews, but the masses haven't hit it yet. So you always have a little bit of anxiety, I would guess.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest moment of anxiety is when you turn that book into your editor, you know, because that's going to be the most critical judge of what you've written. When the book comes out, yes, you're anxious and you worry about all that stuff, but I think the first judgment day is when your editor gets that book, and then you get the email with all the questions and the notes. You know, that's always
fun. And then
fun.
It's like I turned in an English paper again because now they're going to red ink the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And they don't
get
certain things.
Then you start going back to those high school days, and you're like, oh, my gosh, they're going to...
Right.
It's like another
essay. Just like being in school. I'm going to be tested now.
Well, Connie, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Oh,
wish you nothing
you,
but the best. Good luck with your tour
moving forward.
And the book, again, comes out on June the 8th. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you, John. Thanks.
You have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is author Connie DiMarco. And you can visit her at Connie DiMarco, that's DiMarco.com. For more information on this book, The Madness of Mercury, the first in a new Zodiac mystery series with her character, Julia Benetti, astrologer. So make sure you check that out. We want to thank you again for joining us. However, wherever, whenever you listen to the show, it's always a pleasure to have you guys with us. Make sure you check us out with all of our shows. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Get all the shows right into your listening device and enjoy and get all the Crime and Science Radio, Story Blender, Beyond the Cover, and Suspense Radio you can handle. So until next time, everybody, want to say thank you. Keep reading. Have a good one.